What's up, fam?
we've been here a long time. We have, I guess, like 2-3 hours now. We've been doing micro content. So it's very hot in here. I'm ready to go home and eat. But I cannot wait for you to hear this conversation. The reason we were here so long is because we had an awesome conversation with Brooke Alex. She's a pop star. She lives here in Nashville. We have friends of friends and just kind of met through a couple people. And I think you're going to really love this conversation, especially the third Why Are We Here part gets really saucy. So you're going to really enjoy it. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to like the podcast. Make sure to follow us on Instagram. Just search Why Are We Here podcast. We'll pop up. Same thing with the old clock app, Tiki Talkie. Hit us with the follow. Bunch more episodes coming at you. And we will see you guys soon. Here's Brooke Alex. Why are we here?
I thought it was going to be chill until I came in here and it was a whole
studio
setup.
I know, it feels intimidating, but it's just because they're really good at what they do. I could never do any of this, so cool. I hire them to do the cool stuff. Mm. And really, at the end of the day, I just want to talk to cool people.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And who's been the coolest person you've interviewed so far?
Oh, that's a great question. I interviewed my parents, which I know, like, that's not, like, a necessarily, like, the coolest person in the world to other people, but it was a very cool interview for me. Because I just, like, got to ask a couple questions that I was like, I don't think I've ever asked you this for real.
Yeah.
Or, like, what were you actually thinking in this moment? Because I was 5, you know? Like, it's
totally
very different.
So. I love asking my parents weird questions. They're just, like, life questions. Because as we get older, we realize they're humans who had histories before us.
Yeah.
Like, before we were alive. And, like, oh, my God, you dated other people. And
right. All
it's just weird.
Things. Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, you did all the same stuff I did. I don't know.
Yeah. Or, like, how was I as a kid? Like, because now that I'm old enough to understand the context of having a kid and what that would look like. And
totally.
I've never thought of doing that.
And yeah.
Like, my dad was, like, crying. Like, it was, like, a whole thing. So,
yeah.
I'm very excited for that episode. I interviewed...
That didn't come out yet?
Not yet. That'll be season 2.
Cool.
And then Josh Radner, who's a buddy of mine. He was on, like, How I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
He's, like, the lead character in that show.
I didn't really watch it, but
yeah,
what
but
was
just
his
a
name?
Fascinating. Ted Mosby.
Literally
yeah,
the main guy.
Yeah,
okay, okay.
The dude, yeah.
Cool.
So
that's
that
awesome.
Was fun.
How'd you guys become friends?
Super random connection. Like, he was gonna be in Nashville and he's gotten into music. He's like kind of like a Renaissance man. He writes
okay.
plays and does music and acts, and then messaged me and was like, hey, I'm gonna be in Nashville, you want to hang out? We wrote some songs, which I was like, I don't even know we wrote songs.
Yeah.
But that was pretty fun. So when I was thinking about doing the podcast, I was like, he'd be a great guy to interview. And he's super like existential, spiritual. He has like all the quotes and all the like super wise guy.
That's
he does this
cool.
like newsletter where he just like sends out these like essays that are just super esoteric and like beautiful and cool. So that was a really good one.
Interesting. I guess he's like set for life after doing that show.
Yeah, which like, is some of the questions I asked are like, what do you want to do?
Right.
You know, monetarily, you're fine.
Yeah.
Obviously, that show gets played every second of every day on every TV.
I wonder if he's making as much as the Friends people. Or
yeah, right?
You know?
Because that, like, that Friends money is generational.
Yeah.
Like, you're good forever.
Like, millions and millions.
And millions and millions.
I feel like he probably has the same, but why did he move to Nashville?
Well, he doesn't even live here. He's he's in L.A.
Oh,
and
okay.
He still acts. Like, he's in a show on Amazon with, like, Al Pacino. So he still kind of, like, is in the mix.
Okay.
I think what he kind of talked about was, like, Jim Carrey said this before, which is, like, I hope everyone... you know, makes all the money they ever want just to realize it's not the solution kind of thing.
Mm.
And that's kind of what he talked about. Like, the saddest he's ever been was, like, you know, at the peak of what people think would be success. Like, the most money, the most fame. And he's like, that's when I was, like, breaking down and having panic attacks. So,
of course. Is he married?
Yeah. He's not.
Okay.
Uh-uh. Yeah. That was a really fun one.
He's
really good. Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. Where are you from originally?
New Jersey.
New Jersey?
Up by New York City.
Okay.
So... like, literally, I live in Old Topan, New Jersey, and the town over is Topan, New York. So, like, right on the border.
Nice. And, like, why Nashville, and how'd you end up in Nashville?
When I was in college, I did a semester in L.A., New York, and Nashville to decide between the three.
Really?
And I loved Nashville
the most. Is that, like, a part of a program?
No, it was – I did Elon in L.A.
Okay.
I went to Elon University. And so instead of going abroad, I did a semester in L.A. in the spring, and then I did a summer in Nashville and a summer in New York City.
That is so fun. I've never heard of that in my entire life.
Yeah.
That sounds like a dream.
It's definitely because I'm a planner. And I was like, if I'm going to move somewhere, I want to have experience living in those places for a little bit beforehand. Sure. So that's why I did that. And it worked out really well because I still, of those three places, love Nashville the most.
I love that. And so Nashville being the most, why Nashville? Like, you don't do country music. Like, what is the, you know, that's kind of the classic, yeah, why are you here if you don't do country music thing?
Classic Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah. See, this, now we're going to get to the good stuff because you're talking to, again, I'll use the word stan for the second time today, a Taylor Swift stan.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm very happy to hear you like, yes, Taylor Swift, because some guys don't, and that's
what a shame.
Very bad.
How sad would it be that you have such a, you know, masculine complex that you couldn't enjoy the songwriting of Miss, totally, Taylor Swift? I think, and I've said it before on the show, hot take, I think she's the GOAT. I think she is the greatest singer-songwriter of all time.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, for sure.
Yeah, but for that's me as well. And that's, it's subjective. To...
Okay.
Because, yeah, I think her ability to write as an artist is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people are great artists, mm-hmm, and it takes, not that she doesn't have amazing co-writers or producers, mm-hmm, but her vision and the way that she's navigated her, like, eras, you know, like, as, like,
yeah,
her ability to go from Reputation to, like, Folklore, mm-hmm, and everything in between. That's pretty crazy. And for it to be as successful, for her touring history. And then she's also so young. She has so much time.
Yeah.
Like, we're witnessing probably the first third of what Taylor Swift will be, hopefully.
I hope so, too. I don't know. Like, she's already a legacy artist at this point.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But it is crazy because it really shows you that it's people falling in love with the person she is. It doesn't, mm-hmm, matter what music she puts out. They're, exactly, going to be fans of her and just support her.
Yeah.
Like, even, honestly, I'm not the biggest fan of Folklore personally, but, mm-hmm, I bought it anyway because,
of course, you're bought in on her. She's your friend.
Exactly.
That's how I try to convince myself as well of, like, how do I take somebody from a passive fan to, like, a friend, somebody who, like, if your friend's in town, you would go see them at a show.
Totally.
If your friend puts out a song, you'll buy it.
Totally.
And there's, like, that difference. And she does that. I'm the same way. Like, even if I don't love something, I'll be like, nah, I gotta stream it.
Gotta support.
Taylor's version, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. I mean, I feel like you're doing that with TikTok and stuff. Like, that's what TikTok is trying to get people to buy in on you as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. So. You're on TikTok. I feel like it's kind of changed your trajectory. How'd you, like, find out about it? How'd you get convinced to hop on the app?
There's a duo called Small Town Hollywood on there. They're based here. And back in 2019, they were doing covers. And, yep, I think they had almost 1 million followers on TikTok. And back then, no one was talking about TikTok,
right,
yet. So they were one of the very first to hop on it. And they were looking for a girl to do a duet with them. And so my friend Kayla Abdu connected us and was like, Brooke would be interested.
I love Kayla, into the co- the,
yeah, she's, yeah, great. She's one of my best friends here.
Yeah.
Which I know you know, but connected us. I did the cover with them. And when we were about to post it, they were like, you should make a TikTok account so we can tag you in this.
Mm.
And you should post a cover of your own so that you can build a fan base right away. And they helped me so much because with that one video, I gained like 10,000 followers.
Dang.
You know,
because, that's a great way to start.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people struggle to start on TikTok because, oh, yeah, now it's so saturated.
Right.
If you didn't get in right at the beginning, it's tough now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very lucky with that. But then I still had to put in the work. It took me over a year and a half to get over 100,000 followers.
Yeah.
But
that's still such a crazy feat to think of. Like, I always try to do this for myself of, like, that's a football stadium full of people. That's more than a football stadium,
totally,
full of people. What has been the, like, because you've definitely done a great job of promoting your original music, and that's opened a ton of doors for you on there. I love your videos. Like, I feel like you're a great storyteller on TikTok, and it feels,
oh,
like, inspired almost by Taylor Swift of, like, bringing people into your story.
Absolutely.
Like, what is the thought process behind making a TikTok, especially some of the more, like, produced ones or the ones where, like, you're really telling the story of the song?
I feel like people buy into the song more when they know what it's about. Mm-hmm. That's a very Nashville thing. Especially in writer's rounds, a lot of people will explain what the song is about, and then the audience is more invested in the song,
yeah,
and so I'm just trying to do that on TikTok as well. Especially in pop music, I feel like sometimes that gets overlooked.
Absolutely.
And so because I'm doing pop, I'm just trying to bring in that Nashville storytelling aspect.
Right.
And combining the two, and it seems to be working and resonating with people.
Yeah. How much – I'm always curious because I spend way too much time on the app, both as a – viewer and both as a creator, like, how much of the how much of TikTok is built into your strategy as an artist of like getting your music out there?
It's the whole thing.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I was so curious because I'm like, I don't know how else to do it now.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
do people really make YouTube videos and like, or like put stuff on Facebook? I don't know. Like,
at this point, like, for example, I just had a song come out this past Thursday and I promoted it on TikTok. It got 5,000 pre-saves and then the pre-saves didn't work. And because of that, the song is not streaming as well. So it literally just proves to me that TikTok.
How did the pre-saves not work?
You know, it's always an issue with independent artists getting pre-saves to work.
Yeah.
And so apparently I put in the UPC code instead of the ISRC code for the song. And so it saved it as an album to people's albums instead of as a song to their liked songs.
Whoa.
People only listen to their liked songs. People don't check their albums. So I lost all those streams on the day of release, which could have really helped the Spotify algorithm.
Right. But what a good example of, like, it's like a control variable of, like, okay, if I put out a song with TikTok in the pre-saves, and if I don't with this very unfortunate thing that happened, look what happens.
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
Absolutely. And so now I'm just like, hopefully I can get another video to blow up. I don't know.
Right.
That's where it's like, stressful.
Oh, the most stressful. I'm literally, I feel like part of my day every single day is like, what is a hook for this song? How do I make somebody care about, you know, I just put out a song and like, I have literally a note with like 50 versions of that 2 to 3 seconds in the beginning. Like, like love songs, like, you know, you're trying to think of like how to tell the story of the song.
How it's to super hook the audience in in the first 2 seconds.
Right.
Because otherwise they'll just scroll away.
I know, for you,
you have such a large following on there. I'm wondering, like, every time you put out a song now, do you have a certain amount of listens already in the queue? Or do you still have to get a song to pop off on TikTok for it to do well?
Sure. I'm trying to be really intentional about getting people. I kind of like in my brain, it's like the Titanic. I try to get them on lifeboats to like other things. So like to Spotify to like get them to follow there. So that day of like it will do better. Hopefully if a video even doesn't do well, we have a texting list, things like that. So that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But 1000% the TikTok doing well or not doing well changes the life of the song. And I've seen both. I've seen putting out a song and having no TikTok success and feeling the same exact way.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts. And you're like, both of these songs, I love the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then putting out a song like the last one that came out, I got very lucky and had a TikTok do well.
Mm-hmm.
And now the song has done well because of that singular video.
Right.
Which is really stressful because you're like, if I don't make a video in the next 2 weeks leading up or 2 weeks as it comes out, that entire song might get skipped over, that entire song. But I also learned with another song that I put out over 2 years ago that's just now kind of moving at its highest speed, that like really no song's dead at any time too. Like as artists, we feel like we're moving forward, but the internet kind of doesn't know. Like, how many times have you heard a song like from 2004 or whatever on TikTok going viral and you're like, what the fuck? Like, I listened to this in middle school. Why is this popping off right now? So I think absolutely, there's some hope there, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, that's how Lizzo got famous. Her song 1000% was on a show, in a movie 2 years later after it came out. And so that's what all my friends are saying to me right now as as my song is tanking. I'm just like, they're like, there's no time constraint. Even though you feel like you have to get it to pop off in the next 2 weeks, it's not true.
Well, and the reality is if in 6 months you make another video and it has that same 5,000 pre-saves effect, you will watch it on Spotify jump, whatever that is. So that always gives me some hope, but it's just very stressful. It's
totally
a lot.
Totally. Yeah.
Is that song Oldest? Is that what just came out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that song.
Thank
you. I was listening to that on my way here. I was like, this is great. I'm not the oldest, but I feel like the oldest.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What are you? Wait, should I guess?
Sure, hit it.
Middle.
Technically, but I'm like a double middle. There's four of us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I feel like you have like the pizzazz of the middle child.
I'll take that.
You know what I mean?
That's
they're
a high
really
compliment.
Charismatic.
Sure, sure.
I feel like, I don't know, they just get people to like them easily.
I want people to like me. That's definitely part of it. That's part of the middle childness. I have an older brother, a younger brother, and a little sister. My older brother is awesome, but there was a period of time where like there was some drama in our family, and so I kind of stepped into that older sibling role. So I just really like, even though I'm not the oldest, I very much related to your song. You have a lot of Summer in the Hamptons is about your your
my parents meeting.
Yeah. And then oldest is about your siblings. Mm-hmm. Like, are you very close to your family?
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of what I, like, I got the vibe from your music. I'm like, oh, she's obviously very inspired by your family. Like, what does that mean to you when you write about your family?
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, before this, so these are all part of the forthcoming EP that's about my family and my roots.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's
thanks. Sweet. So Grace, the first one was about my mom. Summer in the Hamptons is about how my parents met and fell in love. Oldest is about being the oldest child. And we're going to continue from there. But all the two EPs I put out previously were about love and heartbreak, which most songs are about. Mm-hmm. And I felt like those dated themselves because I don't care about those boys anymore.
Sure.
Like, they're not a part of my life anymore. Yeah. And I would write songs in sessions that I'd be excited about. And then 2 weeks later, I don't care about that guy. So when I started writing these songs about my family, which obviously I'm not going to change the way I feel about my family.
Right.
They started to feel more like they could withstand time. And so I was excited about them for longer.
Oh, I love this.
Thank
this
you.
Makes me so happy.
That
just like struck such a chord for me. I have a song that I... For my parents, it's like their kind of love story as well. And every time I sing that song, there is just such a deeper connection to it than like exactly what you're talking about. I'm just retweeting you in real time here because I'm like, I love that. What is the why like make a EP about your family? Is it just the timelessness? Is it...
Well, so what happened was I wrote the song Grace first.
And about
that,
your mom.
Yes. And because I loved that song so much, I was like, this is a hit. This is it. I just started offshooting from there, essentially. Like, when I create an EP, I do it in a probably a bad way where I just write each song as it goes. And then I find a way to make it into an EP.
Oh, I love that, though.
So instead of whereas most people would write all six songs first and then release them in succession, I wrote Grace. And then I was like, okay, the next song I want to write is about how my parents met. And then I wrote it 10 times, Summer in the Hamptons, until I got it how I wanted it.
Oh, shit.
And then I released it. Same thing with Oldest. I think I wrote that like 5 or 6 times until I got it how I wanted it. So I'm just going into all my sessions being like, do y'all want to
try? I'm writing a song.
Yeah.
You can either get on board.
Or we can write a different one, but I might not put it out.
I relate so much. I'm working on a project that's so intentional where like there's these chapters. And so I have these ideas and it's like this, I can't just write a song like this. It has to be this song. So I need to come up with this. And the last single I put out, I tried to write it 5 or 6 times. Do you have a tough time forgetting versions of the song though, that you wrote?
No, because if they're not it, I think it's because they're not memorable.
Oh.
If they were it, they'd be memorable.
Gotcha. Is the lyric similar? Is it mostly changing the melody?
Sometimes I draw from similar lyrics, but I try not to use obviously exact lyrics because of songwriting credibility and stuff like that. But I go into a room with new songwriters and I don't share the old song with them at all. So they're creating obviously new concepts and ideas around it that weren't done by the past songwriters.
Yeah.
So it ends up never being an issue. But that's funny you say you're doing the same thing because every time I bring that up to a songwriter, they're like, whoa, I've never heard of that. That's crazy that you're writing the same song over and over and you're doing the same thing.
It's because I have the idea. Like, I feel so similar to you in that I'll find an idea that I'm so in love with and I know if I execute on it the way I want to, that it will do amazing. It will tell the story exactly how I want to say it.
Yeah.
But if I fuck up the verse or if, like, the bridge is off, like, I have to keep going and rewriting it because it will just bother me so much because I have put out, like, what I think is the B version of a song and it drives me nuts forever. Like, every time I sing it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done that, put out a song that I felt like wasn't exactly what I wanted to say.
That was my early, you know, moving to Nashville, getting into music. I hadn't done music growing up or anything, so I just, like, tried a lot and just put out a ton of music.
Yeah.
And it was super helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like one of the mistakes that I would make is like, well, I just need to put out something. So I'll put out this, even though I don't love the second verse or whatever. And that really taught me through that kind of like failure, if you will. Okay. I don't want to feel this way ever again.
Wow.
So I am going to, no matter how long it takes. And sometimes my manager's like, it's done. I'm like, it's not done. That rhyme or whatever, it's not perfect. And so, although it feels like perfectionism, maybe it is. I will keep going. I will keep writing it
totally.
Over and over and over.
So when did you feel like what song was your big break?
Oh.
Probably the one that's going viral on TikTok.
There was a song, I guess now it's a song that came out 2 years ago, which is crazy. And we put it out and this was like pre-TikTok and it didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I now feel almost confused. I'm like, like, is the release week mean anything? Because this song was found really like 6 months later through making this like challenge up of like the thing that you did on your TikTok where like the way that your parents met. I was like, that is a genius challenge of like in a group of friends, like going around, because I was so interested. I was like so into that.
Thanks.
And so I had something similar to that where I did like this My Person challenge. And so that song now over 2 years has like kind of been the song that's changed my life for sure.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so Spotify kind of came over and was like, let's put you on playlists and stuff now.
Nope.
No.
This is the weird part of the story is that it got playlisted when it came out. Did okay. And then now if you look at the statistics, 0% of the daily streams come from editorial playlists. It is all just natural TikTok ability. So that's why I feel kind of like a crazy person, like that I feel like I work for TikTok sometimes, because I just have felt how much it really can like help me and change my life. But it's kind of scary in that same way, because exactly what we're talking about, like if it doesn't, it hurts so bad, because I have since then put out a lot of music and had a lot of ups and downs in between. It's
totally.
Really crazy.
And when did you start putting out TikToks?
Summer of like 2019 maybe, but just like barely. And my sister convinced me, and I did like a couple covers, and like really for 6 months it was like 100 views, just like terrible. And I got very sick of it. But then I started watching a couple people, kind of like what you were talking about, Small Town Hollywood, is that their name? I think maybe even they were a good example. I saw a couple people, I'm like, this is changing their life. And I remember Vine coming out early, and I like kind of missed that.
Yes.
And so I was like, I'm not going to miss the same thing again.
That was my exact thought process with it. I was like, I don't care that maybe it's embarrassing to do it.
Nope.
I do not want to miss it.
Yeah, because all the people I like thought were cringy or whatever making those are Shawn Mendes, Luke Combs, David Dobrik, like whatever. They did the thing, and they had an audience because of that. And now we're kind of feeling the oversaturation. And I think you and I are both super grateful that we got on earlier. I think it's been a really big help.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When did you get on?
Like 2019. So probably a little after you. Like it was later in 2019.
Okay.
But.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And it's funny you say you started doing covers, because that's what I was doing too. And that's what I thought people wanted, but they don't want that. Or experience.
Same.
I think people like resonate more with my original music. They want to hear new music that they've never heard before.
Yep.
So I don't know what it is. Like Rosemary Joaquin is my roommate. She's a pop artist as well. And every time we post covers, they never do well. For some reason, I don't know.
I think it's the Taylor Swift thing again of like, it feels like your friend. Like if people already bought in on you, they're not hearing your voice for the first time being like, ooh, I like the way that she sounds. They already like the way that you sing. They like your tone. They like your melodic sense. They like your ability. And now they want to hear the stories. They're like in on your authorship or whatever.
Right.
Now they're in on the stories, which is great. You should be pumped about that. But it sucks because then you kind of have like a very specific thing. And then you feel like the pressure of putting out music probably more and more.
And that's the other thing is a lot of people I notice post demos. I refuse to post a demo because I do not want to be blindsided with it like blowing up. And then I don't have the resources to get it out in time. And then I feel like I missed my window of opportunity to release it. So I only post a song when it's done and like ready to be released. And some people might say that's like, you shouldn't do that. I don't know. Everyone has their own way of doing. Do you post demos?
I'm trying to think if I have. Like, I think I've posted some, like, acoustic things, but they've all tanked so bad. So I don't think I've had even come close to the problem of, like, them blowing up.
Gotcha.
No, I was super intentional with this last release. Like, and, you know, just let's be honest here. It was like, should I put this out? I had the pre-save link. Like, I was ready to rock. So even the pinned comment is like, JK, you can pre-save this right now at the link in my bio. So we were ready to go in case something popped off. And like we had a couple of videos do well. And then, you know, like a week in, I was just like, cool. Well, because TikTok is responding well, I'm going to put the song out. Already release date, picked and all that stuff. So.
And we should talk about how TikTok is a little fake.
It's the fakest of the fake.
It's like the YouTube personality. Like I was in LA this past month and I was living with two new roommates I'd never met before. And I was like, I need to film a TikTok, but I don't want them to see me filming this TikTok.
Yeah.
I need to go out to my car so they don't think I'm a weirdo. Like I'm being myself, but I'm not. I'm being like an exaggerated version of myself.
Of course.
For the TikTok.
Because I feel like if we're ourselves to the like, or I'll speak for myself. If I was just myself, I'm kind of a little bit boring. Like I gotta spice it up a little bit and get like, and, you know, how many times do you like the ninth take of something because you hate it or whatever? You can't on the ninth take actually be like, I wrote this song about my parents. I think it's going to change my life. But that's how you want people to feel when
right.
they hear it.
Right.
So there is some acting involved. Totally. But it's not inauthentic because that's really how you feel about the song, is you really believe it's the best song you've ever written or whatever that hook is. So it's,
yes,
it's
but
tough.
You're definitely pulling out more than yes. like, yeah, on that ninth take.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So funny. What do you feel like, or who do you feel like besides Taylor Swift are some of your like, maybe instead of like, she's kind of very inspirational as a songwriter and stuff. Maybe like sonically, like who do you want to sound like or heard somebody and like, whoa, you can sound like that? Like, was mm-hmm. there anybody like that?
More recently, I love Lennon Stella's whole album.
Mm.
I'd say she's the only other artist besides Taylor where I loved the entire album and there were no skips for me.
Mm.
And then Upsall, two upcoming artists that I really love are Upsall and Wolf, Julia Wolf. I don't know if you've heard of those two, Mm-mm. but they're more in the pop sphere.
Okay.
But they are, you will know their names soon. But
sweet.
Upsall is really pretty big on TikTok. She has almost a million followers, I think.
Wow.
But I heard her name previously. She had a song called Drugs that was just so unique sounding. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh my God, I've never heard anything like that before.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And then Wolf, same thing. She has her own sound where it's got a little dark, edgy kind of urban feel to it. Almost rap, but
okay.
still singing. It's
sure.
just both of them make you feel really badass. I love music that makes you feel badass.
I love that.
Yeah.
I could feel that. Like there's definitely some rock in like Oldest mm-hmm. where like that, especially that second chorus like digs in like that. And I was
Thanks.
Like, oh yeah, this song's about like being the oldest sister, but it kind of made me like want to like run or something, which is great. I
Good.
Love that feeling. Yeah.
Hopefully it makes you feel the emotion that I feel about singing about being the oldest.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have like a Mount Rushmore of like people in pop music where you're like, these are the four or three to four people that like are the goats or the greatest? Taylor Swift, obviously being one of them, it seems like.
Honestly, I think it might just be Taylor Swift for me.
Just like she's
Mount Rushmore. The one. She's the one.
Yeah.
Obviously, I like Beyonce, I like Ariana Grande,
mm-hmm.
but like none of them have an entire album where I'm obsessed with every song on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I feel the same exact
you know?
Way. She really, I'm so glad that we can just bond on this Taylor Swiftness because
yeah.
I feel like she's so in a class of her own. It's
mm-hmm.
like almost ridiculous. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I feel like people in Nashville especially respect Taylor.
Yes.
Because of how songwriting is so important here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is proof that she is a great songwriter because the best songwriters are here and they all agree that she is amazing.
Yeah.
So.
100%. You recently, was it Lollapalooza that you got to play?
Yeah.
Tell me the story of like how that happened. Because you're an independent artist, correct?
Mm-hmm, I am.
That's a really big deal as an independent artist.
Thank you.
That's really awesome.
It was definitely the best, the coolest thing I've done in my music career so far.
That's amazing.
Thanks. Basically, Bumble had an opportunity to submit your music to be on a festival lineup. Basically, most festival lineups are primarily male dominated.
Mm.
So their focus was to try and get more females on festival
that.
Stages.
Yeah.
And so I was selected as one of maybe five women who were selected and each one got a different festival. So I was chosen for Lollapalooza.
That's so sick.
Yeah.
Is that a TikTok thing or like a...
No, it was, they were running their own campaign separately outside
Dope.
Of TikTok. And so, yeah, it was an amazing experience. I got to go backstage. My name was on the back of the t-shirt.
That's so sick.
I was on not one of those mini stages. I was on one of the bigger stages with lights. And
oh, that's so fun.
I had my own trailer. It was like the whole experience
mm-hmm.
that I've always dreamed of.
Right.
So it just came together and it was crazy.
Does an experience like that, like, does it feel like this taste of a thing? And then were you very like addicted to that? Like, oh, I now know what I have to do. Like, this is it. I want to do this.
It was wild because when I was there, I was like, every aspect of this I love and just proves to me that this is what I need to do with my life. Like, this is what I was born
that.
And meant to do. Like, I luckily had a TikTok blow up right before I got there. It got like 8 million views, my most viewed ever TikTok.
That's insane.
And so a lot of people were coming up to me, recognizing me at the festival.
Oh, yes.
So it was like I had fans coming up to me and wanting to take pictures. And I had my trailer and the backstage pass. It was the entire full experience.
Oh.
And every aspect of it I loved. Like, I loved going to try on my outfit, my costume, going to, like, meet the people, take pictures, like, walking around the festival, making sure everything was taken care of, my rehearsal. Like, just every aspect of it was everything I've ever dreamed of and wanted to be a part of. So
I love that so much. Thanks. My favorite, like, thing is to watch someone feel like they're, like, really living their dream and in their element. And, like, as you're telling that story, I'm like, that's exactly what she needs to be doing. That's so cool. I love that.
Thank you. I'm sure you feel the same way when you get to perform and
it is. At festivals. I played this weekend, like, for the first time in 2 years, like, a first touring opportunity. And exact same feeling of people coming up to you. They know the lyrics to songs, or they drove from a state or whatever. That drug is so strong, and it also really informs the way I write music. Like, I think being alone in my house is one way to write music, and then you go and you see all these people and they're there to, like, party or to, like, feel this thing, and I was like, oh yeah, I need a song that feels like this, or I wish I had a better transition here. So it's really informing too. I think that's kind of a fun part. Is
interesting.
Yeah.
So you change songs after performing them
not
live?
That I well, like, the definitely the transitions or the intros or the outros, because, like, energy live is so hard to keep going.
Mm.
And it's so hard to keep people, like, invested. Like, it's the same way, like, on TikTok, you need a hook. So, like, why should someone care about this original song if they've never come here before, they've never seen me live, or they got drugged by their girlfriend or whatever? Like,
right.
How do you make them care about it? So when I'm there live, and I learned from failing, really, mm-hmm. of, like, oh, that part sucked. Like, why did that suck? Oh, because there's no context to that story. Mm-hmm. Or we went way too high energy, and then we went to, like, the slowest part of the set.
Mm.
So just little things like that, I think.
Totally.
As I continue to adjust.
And I wonder, as a guy, you're just, like, behind your guitar, standing mm-hmm. on stage. Like, I usually bring backup dancers to try and, like, have more going on stage. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's difficult for you to, like, keep that energy up because it's just you on stage with a guitar. Like,
see, but for me, I play the guitar in the opposite order, which is I kick my band off for, like, one song and I do an acoustic mm-hmm. breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But I am more of a spaz and I'm running around. I treat my show more like a pop show.
Okay.
Energetically, because, and I love my country people, but a lot of country shows are boring to me
mm-hmm.
because it's one person standing in the same place with the same guitar.
Yeah.
When, you know, we go see Mr. Justin Timberlake over there, it is a production
right.
and people are dancing. So I'm coming up with moments where I'm like, okay, there's a solo over here. So I'm telling my acoustic player to walk to the middle. Even that little shift of, like, oh, somebody's moving, that is important. And, like, why should someone not go grab a drink in this moment? Okay, well, let's create us. Like, I want to teach someone how to sing the chorus of the song before we get into it. And so I try to build a lot of that, but it's hard. It is hard to keep people's attention, especially if they don't know who you are. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah. No, totally.
It's a lot.
And it's funny because I used to think I could just wow them with my voice.
Right.
But everyone who's performing can sing.
Yep.
Usually.
Yeah.
So you're just not going to wow people in the way you did when you were 10 singing. And right. you're like, wow, that girl's 10 and can sing. Now it's like, how can I put on a show
mm-hmm.
that is a full production that you're intrigued the whole way?
Yeah.
With everything I'm saying, everything I'm doing on stage.
And you said you have backup dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to, like, rehearse? I've always been so curious
yes.
about that. Is that wild?
Yeah. So I usually have two backup dancers, two girls.
That's so fun.
And last year before the pandemic, for my previous EPs, me and my roommate would just come up with the dances and then
yeah.
teach it to each other or whoever was going to backup dance for me. For Lala, I had two girls who went to college from me reach out and they were like, you're playing Lala. Do you need backup dancers? And I was like, yeah, if you want to dance.
That's so cool.
So they choreographed the whole dance themselves, like, for every song. And it was amazing. It came out so well.
That's so sick.
It's just funny, like, as I'm on this road for my career,
mm-hmm.
the people that reach out from my past who can help and
yeah.
have things to offer, and then we can come together and, like, bring each other up as we go.
But I hope you know that that's a great compliment, because that's not normal. A lot of people don't have a lot of people in their past reaching out to them. That means that you're obviously the kind of person that people want to be involved with, and you are kind to them. And so that's great. I love that.
Thanks.
Okay, we are going to move into my favorite part of the interview, which is just the weirder, crazier questions. There's no wrong answers. And we'll see what happens.
Okay. These are, like, existential
pretty much
questions.
Yeah, it's the third section of the Why Are We Here, which is, like, why are we here, man?
Cool.
The doobie section, as we like to call it. Do you believe in aliens? And if so, what do you think they look like?
I do believe in aliens, I've decided, because how could the universe be so vast and we're the only things that were created?
Amen.
What do they look like? Probably scary.
Scary?
Probably not like us.
Yeah.
So scary to us.
Scary to
but
us.
But probably hot to each other.
I'm sure that's so funny you said hot to each other because I've never heard anybody say that. It's so true. Like, scary monsters would be like, that's a hot, scary monster because I'm a scary monster.
Yeah. I always think about how we're attracted to other humans and they're literally just naked mole rats with hair coming out of the top of their head.
It's so weird.
Think about when how ugly we are.
Oh, I think about it all the time, like, especially about myself. I'll look at myself, I'm like, I have eyebrows and like teeth. I have fucking bones coming out of this gum line. And it's so novel to us it's not novel to us because we are designed to not freak out when we look in the mirror because otherwise we would all be in existential crisis all the time. But we're ugly little monkey rat things walking around. Crazy.
Totally.
Crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, hopefully they are hot to each other and not too scary to us. If you could relive one night of your life, which night would it be and why?
Oh, that's interesting.
One night.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Probably one of my best shows. Maybe my EP release show in 2019. I did it at Mercy Lounge, and it was like the largest crowd I've had for my original music ever. I wasn't expecting that many people to show up and support. And the fact that it was my first time with lights, the dancers, the band, everything. And it went better than I could have imagined. So probably that night.
That's amazing. Thanks. I love that answer. That's great. Ooh, have you ever had an experience that you cannot explain? If so, what was it? This can be ghost. This can be God, angel. This can be spooky.
I literally just had a talk with someone about how I've never experienced like a miracle or anything like that in my life.
I'm the same exact way. Okay. I ask because I'm so curious.
Yeah.
But I feel the same way. I'm like, am I just dumb? Or like, am I not paying attention? I've never like felt the presence of a ghost or like a light turn off or heard a sound. Like,
yeah. I mean, my mom always tells the story when we were little, my sister Bailey was like in her crib, like talking to someone in her room. And my mom came in and she said she breathed and she could see the air because it was so cold in the room because there was a ghost or whatever.
Yes.
She was like talking to someone in a chair.
You seem skeptical.
I mean, my mom tells the story a lot, so I know the story, but
sure,
we don't know if we believe it.
Okay, fair. Yeah, I don't have one either. But sometimes people get on here, they're like, okay, it was a dark, misty night. Yeah, like it's interesting. Hmm. It's one of the ones that you gotta ask.
Some people have crazy ones. Because we don't believe.
I think it has to be.
If you believe it, then it can happen to you.
That's kind of where I am with like ghosts and stuff. I'm like, you know, are we really gonna say that ghosts exist when we don't have any proof? I'm such a proof, like, I need to have evidence kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so that's been a hard part of my like deconstruction and religion, spooky things. I'm just like,
I was gonna say, are you religious?
Born like super traditional Christian, now kind of like Christian leaning spiritual person.
Okay.
Very interested in that. Part of the reason I like to have these bigger parts of the conversations in the podcast is because like we get to talk about God or aliens or whatever that is, and most interviews never get there. And that's the part to me that I'm the most interested in about people.
I'll talk to you about it.
Yeah. What'd you grow up? What's
I'm
your
not
flavor?
Religious.
Nothing.
My whole family's not religious. And I guess my dad is Jewish, technically.
Sure.
But I've gone to church with friends. I've gone to temple with friends. But I personally don't believe. I'd say agnostic. Basically, if God came down and said, Brooke, I exist, I'd be like, cool, you exist.
Sick. I feel the same way.
But until then, I'm just going to try and be a good person.
Yeah. I always say, like, nobody wants God or Jesus to be real more than me because it would make my life so much easier. Like, my old belief system or like the belief system I grew up with, rather, like that was so comfortable. Mm-hmm. It feels like a warm blanket because it's like as a kid, especially you're like a sponge and you're just absorbing everything, especially that your parents and these adults who have car keys and these things that, you know, like you're like, I have to listen to them. They bring me places. So I feel like I want it to exist, but I as I've grown up, just continue to ask really big questions and can't quite find answers. And that's where, like, I lean a little bit more agnostic. Mm. But then there's also this part of science that tells me, like, matter can't be created or destroyed. but it was one time. So what is that? Mm-hmm. And why, you know, why are we here? What a plug for the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was just wondering, like, what age do you feel like that switched for you? Or was it just gradual?
Early 20s. Okay. Like, I got out of my house. I went to college. Mm-hmm. And my first couple years of college were just, like, fuck around, get drunk. Mm-hmm. I was playing football. I found music in college, like, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. As I got out here and life slowed down a little bit, and I really got away from all my high school friends, like my tribe, if you will, mm-hmm. then I had to ask myself, like, okay, what do I believe that's mine? And mm-hmm. what do I believe that, like, I was given? And that's kind of where I started reading different authors. I got out of my little, you know, and this isn't a bad thing. I think everyone has one, like a echo chamber of ideas. And so I got out of that. Some things I still have, some things I don't, and most things I don't, but it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So all your home friends and family all are religious still and like believe.
I don't know if all of them are. I think a lot of them continue to do the same work that I am, which is like asking me questions and mm-hmm. Seeking out different ways of thinking. But yeah, my parents, like my mom is, she worked at a church for 18 years and continues to work with like a Christian leaning nonprofit. My dad is still a Christian. But all of my siblings are the same as me, which is really interesting.
That is.
It creates a very interesting dynamic in
our
family.
Are they upset, your parents?
Slightly.
Yeah.
You know, like if we're just being honest, like I think it would be really tough because think about it this way. Like if you had children and you genuinely believed that they were going to go to hell if they didn't believe what you believed in, that would make you very, very sad.
Yeah, for sure.
What I kind of always come back to, and I'm going to put this to you, is like if there is a God, it seems like every religion talks about how it's all loving, all graceful, like all it's just this, like it leans towards justice and grace and forgiveness. And so my thought process is that it wouldn't be this cruel God that put us down here with this really hard question without any answers. And then, like, punish us because of it. I think it would be understanding enough to know that he or it built me to be curious. It built me to ask these questions. So I don't think it would, like, punish me for that. And I feel pretty confident in that. But I don't think my parents do. So that it causes a lot of
strife.
Well, just really, like, we can't really talk about it in our family, like politics or religion, because it gets to a certain point in which it's like, okay, we just now we're not gonna agree.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Totally.
But
agree to disagree.
All that is to say, do you like believe in anything outside of religion? Like, do you have a way that you order your life? Do you pray, manifest, meditate, anything like that, that is like a structural way to order your life outside of religion?
I do not. I've tried manifestation from the TikToks I've seen, but where I'm like, I'm just like in my car saying back what she's
I
like saying.
I am a badass. I will make lots of money.
I'm embarrassed to say that, but I definitely have just to like see, but it's never really worked, I would say.
Sure.
But I think I'm just a structured person, so everything I do in my life is the product of me working hard and like putting in the time and scheduling it out. And
sure.
So I don't know. I don't have any other, I probably should meditate because I'm stressed as hell.
Me too.
But
me too.
I don't.
Yeah. But as I got older, what I found was like, people like you who are very successful doing great things who didn't have ways of ordering their life. And I was like, fascinating because I was so afraid to let go because I was kind of like holding on, like, but what would happen if I wasn't a good Christian boy who went to church and read his Bible? Like, would I become a bad person?
Totally.
And I found so many of my friends that were like, yeah, I don't necessarily have a lot that I order my life in, but I love life and I treat people well and I, you know, still do all the things that I was interested in. I was like, well, shit, maybe there's hope. So I think that's great. I think that's like there's nothing that needs, there's not a right answer to that, you know?
That's funny you say that because my roommate, Rosemary Joaquin, that I brought it before, she grew up Catholic. And so she was asking me, we had a deep talk one night about it. She was like, in school, did you learn like right and wrong? Like, because I went to a public school, right, and I didn't go to a Catholic school. I was like, of course, I learned, I learned all of that, like how to be a good person, mm-hmm, and manners and all that kind of stuff. It just wasn't specifically because of God. It was just because of living your life as a normal, regular person.
Yeah.
So I guess like the reason behind being taught that was different, but the lessons were the same.
Yeah. That's kind of what I also figured out too, is like so many of these things were kind of like saying the same thing in a different language, if you will, where I was like, they're saying the same thing, but it's just a different guy in a different time in a different whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gave me hope. That's again, like if everyone's talking about this God that loves you infinitely and has infinite mercy and infinite grace, I think we're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, we're all trying to take different paths up the same mountain to whatever this explanation of the universe is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Totally.
I have one more for you.
Sorry.
What is something that you don't give yourself enough credit for? This is your opportunity to take off the humble hat and just say, I'm great at this, but I'm not good at telling myself I'm great at this.
That's a tough one.
It's a very tough one. Are you good at like accepting compliments or like?
I am.
Are you? Oh, trust me.
I'm just trying to think of if there's something that I am modest about, or I feel like I'm at the point in my life where I know who I am and I know what I'm good at, and I don't pretend I'm not.
Sure.
So I know that I'm hardworking. I know that I'm a good friend. I know I'm all these things. So I don't know if there's anything that I don't let myself fully believe.
Sure. About myself. Where does that confidence come from? Is it like experience matched with nature, like of your genetics? Like,
I think it, my family does have a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I think all my sisters and I are really confident because my parents raised us to be and always instilled in us that we could do anything and we were the best at everything we did.
I love that.
Which maybe probably was like not good, but
I feel the same way.
Whatever. Yeah. I think it helped us ultimately. Yeah, yeah. And that and just working hard and having people respond well to the things that I'm doing and putting out in the world also made me confident as well. And just because obviously I've been working towards this person that I am, and I'm the person I'm wanting to be. So that makes me confident too.
Yay. I love that. That's great. You are really close to your family. This is something like I ask myself is like, first of all, is some like having a family interesting to you at all? Like, do you want kids or anything like that?
I do. It's so interesting because as I get older, I meet more and more people who don't want kids. Mm-hmm. And I've never even thought that was a possibility until I got older. Yeah. I think I've always been scared to have kids just as a woman and the idea of like my body changing and like how much it would hurt to literally have a child. So that definitely really scares me. But I think selfishly I want to have a mini me, something that looks like me and the person I love created.
That's awesome.
I always kind of have wanted to adopt a child also.
My little sister's adopted from China.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
So I feel the same way. I'm like, I kind of just want to adopt like 7 kids because it's the best thing ever. Yeah, it's really cool.
So what was that like? Did she ever feel out of place in your family in any way?
You know what's funny is like, I think in the last couple of years, she's had way more questions than ever, but like, growing up, it was just so, and we told her that she was adopted. It wasn't like this like surprise on your 18th birthday or anything.
I mean, she looks different than you guys.
Yeah, she's Chinese. So she looks very different than the rest of us, blonde. Like she's 90 pounds and like very tiny. And the rest of us Crandalls are like broad humans.
How old is she now?
19.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. About to be 20. But I think now as she gets older, there's definitely some questions. It's more like existential stuff of adoption of like, you know, what does that mean, like, of who I am and my, you know, culture, my heritage, or who could I have been, or the butterfly effect, or that those bigger questions about life come into place. But I think us as a family, we did a really good job. I hope we did a good job. I think she could answer way better, so maybe I shouldn't answer for her. But I think we did a really good job of telling her, like, there's absolutely no difference between you and any of us. We are Crandalls. We are in this together. We are family. And I think she's really felt that the whole way through.
Good. Yeah. That's awesome. And she's the only girl.
Only girl. Yeah. Brother, girl. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always said if I had like, I don't know why I feel like inside me that I'm going to have only boys for some reason. If I don't
I feel
have
the
girl.
Opposite. Oh, really? I feel like I'll only have girls. Yeah, I feel
I
that
can
way.
See you as a girl dad.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Me too.
Much respect. But yeah, and I've said if I don't have a girl, maybe I'll just adopt the girl. So
yeah,
then I can
that's
have
exactly
one.
What my mom did. She's okay. Like, not that I wouldn't love to have a boy, but it'd be cool to guarantee that I have
yeah.
a girl because I would love to have a girl.
That's cool. Yeah. So did they always want to adopt or was it just later after they had all the boys?
My mom had two miscarriages.
Okay.
And then, so like I should have been the fourth, if you will. But they wanted to keep having kids and she couldn't have kids anymore. And so just medically she was tapped and wanted, but you know, mentally and emotionally really wanted to keep having kids. And so they were like, what does adoption look like? I think they met a couple families who had adopted
okay.
and were like, this is amazing. Like the, yeah. The and through my sister, we've been able to trace something like 40 to 50 adoptions of like people taking my parents to dinner or like coming over to our house and meeting her. And it really is that like, it's like addicting. It's such a cool process. It's such a cool opportunity to like bring somebody out of a terrible experience or like sometimes people adopt people with like terrible health issues because they would never have the funds to have that like cleft palate or something replaced, and they can in the U.S. Mm-hmm. with these people. So all of that is just really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a community.
It is. It's a little like, you know how when your ex drove a car and you broke up and then all you see is like
totally
red Nissans yes. or whatever.
Yes.
It's the same thing with adoption. Mm-hmm. Once you have a sibling who's adopted, I'm like, oh, that person is adopted. That person is
that's
adopted.
So
they just pop up all over the place, and there's so many more than you could have ever imagined.
Hmm. Yeah, I really don't know that many people who've been adopted. Yeah.
You have to hang out with my little sister because then you'll be like, oh, she's the coolest, and then I should adopt, and it'll be a whole thing. Yeah.
What about, so her Chinese heritage, does she speak it? Does she know anything about it? No.
She doesn't speak it. She did like a lot of, she went to like a Chinese school outside of school. So she would go to like a kind of like a cultural heritage school to learn about where she's from. She took some language classes.
Mm-hmm.
She did Chinese dance for a long time, which was really cool. So she was cool. Like 15 or 16. Now as an adult, like I think it's kind of up to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's really into like the food. And I think she's really into a lot of the cultural stuff. I'm really curious to see if she ever wants to go back. I would love to go back with her, but like all that is up to her, and we want to really respect her choices. So she's an adult. She's kind of learning like, okay, how much of this is me? How much of it isn't me? But it's been interesting to watch because I think you'll just find out a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And then she'll be like, oh, this was really cool. I figured out that I would have done this or I would have lived here or whatever.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's fascinating.
I'm half Japanese, so my mom is Japanese.
Are you really?
And that's kind of been a struggle in my life, just being an American, like, when I was younger, trying to push that Asian side of me away because I wanted to be white. And
did
I
you?
Wanted to fit in and whatever, yeah. and not, like, I never learned the language. My grandma would bring over, like, Asian food, and I never wanted to try it or anything like that. So, actually, the next song I'm putting out is called I'm Sorry, Tokyo, and it's about that. So
whoa, I'm so excited to hear that. Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, I was curious about if she felt like she didn't belong in either, kind of, you know?
I think that's the really tough part for her is like, and I have friends who are either adopted or mixed race or they feel like they're in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they feel like they don't belong in either of like, well, I'm too American for China and I'm too Chinese for America.
Mm-hmm.
And it can feel very isolating and very like lonely, I think.
Totally.
And I think she's really grappled with that, especially as she gets older. Like in our family, it was always that she's safe to be whatever. But I think the world or the internet can tell you something else. And it's scary. I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I imagine if she was like walking down the street, someone might think she could speak Chinese or something and speak to her immediately or whatever.
And people ask her like questions sometimes that they mean well, but they'll just be like, you know, I can't even think of a good example, but it's just like, oh, like, why would you ask that? Or like, do you know your parents? Or like something that's just like super awkward. Like,
totally.
There's not a good answer to that stuff. So I think that's part of her. She's in that stage of life. I keep saying she's an adult because it's fucking crazy to me that she's an adult. We got her when she was 10 months old. She had her family. So it's really weird to see her as an adult now.
Yeah.
In a cool way.
She's in college now or?
Yeah. She moved to Oregon. So she like moved out of the house for the first time.
Wow. And
was your experience like not wanting to be, Japanese or like not wanting to associate with that or like identify as that? Was that like because you were made fun of? Was that like a?
I think I was worried I would be made fun of.
Mm.
Like another thing was I thought maybe guys would be not into me.
So,
never wanted a guy I had a crush on to know I was Asian because I thought he'd be like, I'm not into her anymore. That's weird.
Oh, I've never thought of that.
Yeah. But as I get older, I find that guys actually have an Asian fetish. That's not an issue.
But
that definitely, like, that kind of thought process I had when I was younger. Just you want to be, like, the classic blonde girl with blue eyes that's in your class that all the guys have a crush on.
Do you feel like part of that is, like, I wonder this for my sister, too, is you look different than the people that are portrayed. So, like, you watch the movie and the protagonist is the blonde cheerleader who gets with the blonde quarterback and they both have blue eyes and they're just sour cream white.
Absolutely.
And you're like, oh, I don't look like that. Mm-hmm. So I will lean into the other side as hard as I can. Is that, like, a part of the equation for you?
I think so. I mean, I don't – probably just media in general.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
portraying.
Movie, music, yeah, all that. Yeah,
for sure. Like, for example, something I've talked about a lot recently is – there's no Asian pop star that's not K-pop right now. Like,
I told that to my little sister because she kind of wants to do music. She's interested.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I'm like, there isn't like a non-K-pop just straight up. Because I have an Asian guitar player in my band. Mm. And I love him. And we always joke about it. He's like the only Asian guy in country music. Like, there's nobody.
Nobody.
And there's definitely no like pop star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Camila Cabello, Latina.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously white, black, no Asian.
Right.
So that's kind of also the lane I was trying to go as well with my music and my career. But, and then in movies and stuff, they're just really bringing a lot of Asian representation right now.
Yeah.
With Shang-Chi, the new Marvel movie.
Yep.
And then Squid Game is huge right now.
Squid Game is sick. Yeah.
But
or Parasite.
Really cool. Yeah. It's really cool that it's all coming to a head right now. I feel like it's all growing. So
yeah,
hopefully that'll help me and just other Asian people.
Me too. I hope so. I like, not that I don't feel this way about every race, but I feel so like, which it's such a good exercise of, I try to do this all the time of like, I have an Asian sister. So I constantly, almost to the opposite of racism, I swing the other way where I like will automatically love Asian people because I'm like, my sister's Asian, so I probably love you.
Yeah.
And it's a good example. I'll think about this all the time. I'm like, if my sister was this, I would love her, you know, whatever that is, sexuality, gender, race. And it's been a really good lesson, especially in our very traditional white family of like, oh yeah, it's more about families chosen rather than it is like blood thing. And
yeah,
super interesting.
Where are you from again?
I'm from Denver, Colorado.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would have thought more of a Southern.
Yeah.
I guess because of the country music, but it makes sense because you do seem like you have more like liberal views.
Yeah, I feel like someone once said like a libbilly, which is like a liberal hillbilly, and I feel attuned to that, which is like, you know, let people do and be and whatever who they want, but I also love to be outside and do all those things, so I kind of fall somewhere within that. And I also feel you know, not to like get into politics, but I feel just very confused. Like, I wish I knew more or like could articulate my stance a little bit more. And another reason why I started a podcast, because I like to ask people how they feel or like how they want the world to be ordered, because I felt like my whole life there was this one way, which was kind of like my parents are a little bit more conservative. And so now as I get older, I'm really doing what I did with religion. I continue to do with politics is like, okay, what part of that do I like or I don't like? Or it's just tough. It's tough to know.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just a part of growing up and also moving to Nashville, which is kind of a city in the middle of a more conservative area. So
what was the biggest difference from like New Jersey to Nashville?
Probably just being surrounded by music 24/7. All my friends from home, no, I was going to say all my friends from home are liberal, and I do have more conservative friends here. But honestly, most of the people here I'm friends with are also liberal. But that's probably because we're in a city.
Sure.
And
yeah, you get 20, 30 minutes outside of here. It's very different. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've never, like, people are like, I won't be friends with you if you vote one way or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't really think like that because I have people I know and love who voted all different ways.
Yeah.
And when they explain their opinion, I am like, oh, that makes sense to me. I understand that opinion. And so because of that, I'm down to hear anybody out. And I That's why I don't really like politics, because I feel like it just makes people fight and mad at each other. So I just try and stay out of it.
I feel the same way. And even like I really don't identify with either team. Like, I don't want to put on the full conservative jersey, and I do not want to put on the full other side jersey, because I feel like part of it is putting on a jersey is kind of the silliness of it. Is like, the second I say I'm a Broncos fan, which I am, go Broncos, it's like, well, fuck the Raiders. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a part of that. And it feels like the whole system's broken, and we definitely won't cure it or, you know, solve any of those problems here today. But I do have one more question. I'm going to let you go. You've been very, you know, gracious with your time, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
By, of course. What has been one of your biggest learning experiences in the last year?
That it truly is hard work over talent. I just told a friend this, but when I was like 13 in middle school, I remember seeing like on someone's shirt, like a Nike shirt, it was like hard work over talent or something. And I
was the quote, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard or something like
maybe,
that.
Maybe something like that.
I always see that and I'm like, oh yeah, that's more and more true as I get older.
Yeah. It might've been that, but I think at that point in my life, I was known as the singer girl in my hometown. And so I was just riding on my talent.
Sure.
And I remember having a thought, I don't know if I have the work ethic to work hard enough for this dream. I might just, like, what if all I have is my talent and I don't have the ability to work hard for it?
Sure.
And now, once I graduated college, I think I'm one of the hardest working people I know. And I don't know if that just came with age or because now it's getting later in my life and I'm like, time is running out. I need to do this now. Like, but I am truly putting in the work and I'm seeing results from it. And I think it's a testament to the fact that that is a true statement. And I'm just proud of the work I've put in, and I encourage everyone else to do the same.
No, and just a full circle, just wrap up the whole thing with a nice bow. The reason that you are here is because we have a mutual friend, Kayla, Abdu, and my manager, Jeff, kept seeing you on his For You page. And then he kind of followed you and kept being like, whoa, this girl's killing it. She's doing this. She's doing this. Holy shit, she just played like Lollapalooza. Like, he saw that. And I think we were talking about guests, and he's like, what about Brooke? And I was like, oh, that's great. And it's because I'm really interested in very hardworking people and like what makes them tick and like what makes them successful. Like, that's kind of why a lot of my questions are like, what are you doing on TikTok? What is your strategy? Like, all that stuff. And so that's why you're here, is because we saw you like busting your ass and we're like, that's dope. We just want to like highlight her because she's sick. So
thank you. Yeah. That means a lot that's what you think of me.
Yeah, no,
before meeting
real.
Me.
That's at least what you put into the world. So I hope I hope you feel that way. And,
yeah.
And thank you again for coming by. Appreciate it.
Appreciate your time. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Very much so. Good. Hi, I'm Spencer. This is the second take of the outro because I fucked up the first one. Guys, this was Brooke Alex. It was an awesome episode. Why can't I say awesome episode? That's what I just fucked up on 2 seconds ago. Oh, it was an awesome episode. Make sure to check out Brooke Alex's socials. Just search Brooke Alex. She also has awesome music. She's coming out with an EP all about her family. And make sure to check that out. And thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to like and subscribe wherever you listen. You can watch us on YouTube. If you're listening at home, you can also watch the episode. We have really great cameras and angles and lighting and all the things. So check it out. We love you guys. We'll see you next week.